Let me call to order the February 1st Police Judicial and Legal Committee meeting for the town of Mount Pleasant. Hard to believe it's February, but here we are. I just want to say before we get started, and I'll try not to get choked up, but Chief Carl Ritchie, I don't know what to say. You are simply the best, and we're happy, but we're sad. We want you to, I want to see pictures on the Harley with the dogs and with Vicky. I want to see you happy, but we're sad because for many of us, we don't know Mount Pleasant without Carl Ritchie being part of it. Please don't go far. All right, item number two, approval of the minutes from the November 30th meeting. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Any discussion? All right, all in favor of approval of the minutes, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. All right, the minutes are approved. Item three is public comments. If you have a public comment, please approach the lectern, give name and address, and you'll be given 2 minutes. Yes, ma'am, Ms. Landing.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
In regard to the civil emergencies ordinance that you will be reviewing this morning on the agenda, I just wanted to, as a lot of folks know, I was the one that brought it up in December, and then it was put aside, and then I brought it up at our meeting last month, the town council meeting, and now it has been brought back to you. I think it's important that the public know and that we all recognize again why I brought this up. The comment was made about the fact that we're still in a civil emergency. It's a state of emergency declared by the governor. That's all correct, and that is why we need this in place. But here's a couple of things that we should look at, and I know I'm short on time, but one is many of us believe that we essentially voted so that our mayor could make unilateral proclamations if necessary, and it was all the way back last April, I believe, right after it hit in March. We therefore thought we could also vote to take that away, but it turns out it's actually much more involved, which is why I thought we should look at this, whether it needs an amendment or whether we can actually take Section 4104 and do a rescission, which is what it says. But I do think it's important, real quickly, that people know, even though I'm pretty sure our mayor wouldn't do this, there are restrictions authorized in a civil emergency, such as during the existence of a proclaimed state of emergency, which we have right now, the mayor may impose by proclamation any or all of the following restrictions: prohibit or regulate the possession of one's own premises of explosives, firearms, ammunition, or dangerous weapons, and prohibit the purchase, sale, transfer, or other disposition; prohibit or regulate the buying or selling of beer, wine, or intoxicating beverages of any kind and their possession; prohibit or regulate any demonstration, parade, march, vigil, or participation therein; prohibit or regulate the sale or use of gasoline, blah, blah, blah. There's a number of others, but those are pretty big ones. In fact, what this basically does, and I don't know how long ago this was put in place, it basically destroys the Bill of Rights of our Constitution. And I don't think that was ever intended by, and I don't know why this was put in place, and you think, well, maybe an insurrection. An insurrection might be the very time where you would feel you needed to be able to bear arms. So I think we shouldn't wait till COVID is over, because COVID is a virus. It will probably be with us from now on, I'm sorry to say, but hopefully we're learning to deal with it. We're getting vaccines, etc. But it's not going to go away any more than any other virus that we've ever encountered in our lifetimes or well before our lifetimes. So let's move forward and make some changes that can allow us to take away these very, very over-the-top powers. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Others? Any other comments? Going once? All right. Police Matters, Employee Years of Recognition. This is item number four.
Good morning, Mayor, Council. It's my privilege to recognize some of our officers for their years of service. SRO Clark. Hillary Clark began her career in February of 2016 in the patrol unit. She's currently assigned to being a school resource officer. The importance of protecting our children cannot be overstated, and it takes a special kind of police officer to be a great SRO. Hillary, you are a great SRO. We thank you. We congratulate you for 5 years, and we look forward to many more. All right, FTO Tatanich. George Tatanich began his career in 2016 as a civilian with the police department as a community service officer. He became a sworn officer in July of 2017. He was promoted to field training officer in May of last year. George, the work you do as an FTO is literally laying the foundation for the success of our agency. It's vital. Keep it up. Keep up the good work, okay? We thank you, congratulate you for 5 years, and look forward to 5 years more, okay? All right. 15 years, James. James Edmonds started his career at the police department in February of 2006 in the patrol unit, where he achieved the rank of FTO. He's one of the individuals that for many years helped us become the great agency that we are by training officers. He's currently in our evidence unit and as a crime scene investigator. And while we're fortunate that we don't have a lot of violent crime, when we do, it's very reassuring, James, to know that we have qualified, highly trained CSIs such as yourself. So thank you. Congratulations on 15 years of service, and we look forward to many more.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all very much, and I just want you all to know, and Chief and Deputy Chief and everybody, this committee and all the council is very well aware of the demands placed on you all in this COVID reality, and we appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Mayor. I have one to recognize. I let Deputy Chief handle those, but this one's kind of, well, very special to me. So I have a 20-year employee.
Fantastic.
I'm going to recognize Ms. Lori Gaskin. Please come forward for me. Come on up. Ms. Gaskin started her career with the town 20 years ago as a records clerk. 3 years later, she moved into the very important position of Executive Administrative Assistant to the Chief. Since that time, she has worked with three different chiefs, but I can tell you, she says I'm her favorite. She has the very important and almost impossible task of keeping my schedule and making sure I'm where I need to be. And for that, I appreciate it, because it can get very busy, very hectic. Although her position is considered non-essential during hurricanes or other storms that would normally allow this position to stay home, Ms. Gaskin is the first to volunteer and come into work to assist with storm preparations. And during this pandemic, when many administrative positions were working from home, Ms. Gaskin felt it was important for her to be working in person to ensure the executive office was running smoothly and efficiently. And I can tell you, you were very much needed, and I appreciated that. Several words come to mind when describing Ms. Gaskin. Loyal, no question about it. Dedicated, dependable, and consistent. Lori, thank you for 20 years of dedicated service to this town, and especially your dedicated service with me as your chief for the past 8.5 years. Wouldn't have wanted to take this journey without anyone else assisting me and working beside my side. So thank you so much for 20 years. We'll do that. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you very much. Appreciate all y'all do. Judicial matters, item number 5. There are no agenda items. Six is legal matters, begins with a review of state law governing the use of fireworks. We all have a copy of our attorney's synopsis of that.
No, I don't. I think it's in my mail.
So, Mr. Pagliarini, thank you very much.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor, Committee.
Here it is.
I believe it was sent to everybody, but.
I got it right here.
Yes.
Thank you. As you can see, in the brief memo we sent, there are basically two requirements for fireworks that the state provides, and they are fairly limiting. The first is that any municipality can impose nothing more than a civil penalty for violations. And the second, which in true legal fashion is very difficult to pin down, is that any restrictions must be limited in scope and must not unreasonably prohibit the discharge of fireworks. So as a municipality, we can provide limitations. Our enforcement power is limited. And again, we must provide whatever this means, reasonable prohibitions. If you look at our neighboring municipalities, the city of Charleston has placed an absolute ban. And you know what they would rely on, we can only assume, to justify that is some of the historic properties and the like downtown. North Charleston has a fairly limited restriction, and that is they are permitted from 9 a.m. to 11:30, and specific provisions for December 31st and July 4th. So that is it in a summary, at least what others are doing, what the restrictions are. We have not necessarily formulated on an opinion whether Charleston's restrictions are defendable. As we're all aware, sometimes the answers to those decisions aren't known until it reaches an appellate court. Whether it even would be challenged, we're not sure. But that's the landscape.
Based on that, and from what you sent us, and we get this all the time, why doesn't Mount Pleasant just ban fireworks? The reason is state law does not give us that authority. Is that correct?
That's correct, sir.
Okay. But in your, are there any questions on, yes, the absoluteness of that, I guess?
Yeah, so I was the one who asked for this to be placed on the agenda, and the reason is we received some complaints via our town email about the noise and the fear that, you know, people's dogs were freaking out about all of it, and people with small children trying to get them to sleep and the fireworks keeping them awake. So I think that there has to be a balance here between it's fun to discharge fireworks. It's something that my kids enjoy doing, and we do it on, you know, New Year's Eve or 4th of July. But this bleed over of the fireworks becoming, instead of a special night for them or a special occasion, it bleeds into the weeks before and into the weeks after. And I don't know if our noise ordinance can take care of that or through that. But I think some kind of reasonable scope for permitting fireworks to be discharged so people can enjoy that, but balanced against, you know, the need, because, I mean, you see it every time. I mean, I'm in some mommy groups on Facebook, and you know, when the fireworks are happening, there's all these moms posting of like, oh my goodness, the baby's crying, and every time the firework goes off, my dog is shaking like a leaf, you know, wish this would go away. So I agree with the mayor. There's no way we can ban fireworks entirely in this municipality under the state law preemption, but is there something reasonable that we could bring forth in our town that balances these needs, or are we already comfortable with what we have? We don't have anything right now, is that right? Just our regular noise ordinance?
Yes, ma'am. And I would. One of the things that we thought about is, you know, matching up at least the fireworks prohibitions or restrictions with our noise ordinance. And the inevitable problem that we have, that every municipality has, is really the different penalty provisions. Again, one of the state restrictions is that it's a civil penalty. Mm-hmm. So in essence, it's almost like you have to have two different analyses or prohibitions to general noise versus fireworks, which is where the state restriction comes in. Not to say we cannot amend our noise ordinance, it would just have a different penalty, and I just wanted to make the committee and council aware of that.
Can you tell us briefly about what you outlined in here about firework prohibited zones? Because we have large neighborhoods with HOAs, and I guess, as I read through this, I was thinking, is this what a neighborhood could do for its own neighborhood?
Yes, sir, absolutely. And those are, what you see in the memo, these FPZs or firework prohibited zones, that there can be a request for those. And that there'd have to be a private property owner to establish this would be to file an agreement with the police department. There are posting requirements, and they can extend those onto public property if necessary. But those are ways. One of the things we do not have, and we could facilitate, is an application process for that via our website, if that were committee and council's wish.
And the legal apparatus for that already exists, is what you're saying. We don't have to invent that. So
that's correct.
That's one avenue. The question is, if you live in one neighborhood and somebody in the other neighborhood is legally shooting fireworks, your firework prohibit, your FPZ doesn't do you much good, does it?
That's correct, sir.
Right.
Yes, sir.
So there are, I mean, there's limited effectiveness in this, even though they can do it. And to establish an FPZ, what do they have to, there's a public hearing?
Yes, sir. There is a public hearing requirement. The application is received. Again, there's, as is usual with any of our public hearings, we provide notice in the newspaper 15 days. And then we can receive testimony from persons related to the application, and it either can be granted. I have thought through the mechanism of that. It says local governing body. That would probably be something we'd want to designate to a committee. I'm not sure which of the lucky committees that would be.
Probably this one.
yes, sir, the mechanism is already there. We would not need to amend our ordinances to accomplish that.
Okay.
One thing we could do is, again, make that application available via our website. Propose a uniform application, which is not necessary, but that is something we could do.
In North Charleston, they permit discharge of fireworks any time of the year between 9 a.m. and 11:30 p.m.
Yep.
So, I mean, literally every night you could be setting off a firework at 11:25 p.m. and booming, and having a big boom through the neighborhood.
That's
very interesting. You know, I wonder if there's, I mean, it seems like most people tend to discharge fireworks surrounding particular holidays. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if there is a way to, you know, in the days leading up to or a couple days after the holidays, is this something that we could explore of having it, or at least make the time? I mean, our regular noise ordinance, you can't make lots of noise after, 9 p.m., isn't it, or something like that?
That's correct, ma'am. Our noise, and as stated earlier, the noise ordinance is a criminal type penalty.
Yeah.
And the state has positioned this so that general noise ordinance don't apply. We'd have to make a specific finding.
Mr. Rambo.
So just to follow up on that. So I mean, I've lived here for a long time, my whole life, but I can only think of one instance where it was a few years ago in our neighborhood where randomly on like a school night, someone was shooting off fireworks at like 10:30 at night, which was quite annoying and made the neighborhood Facebook page kind of blow up. But, and I know people did call the police. So what happens? What happens if the police get called and say, hey, these people are being loud, disorderly, shooting off fireworks. It's 11 o'clock on a Tuesday night.
It's it's a non-holiday night, random night. We would respond to that area and tell them not to be far due to fireworks, and we would use the noise ordinance to do that, and we would ask for compliance. And the times we've had to do that, we've gained compliance.
Yeah.
It's workforce. So that's how we handle those now. And right now, too, on the holidays, the only time we respond is if someone's using fireworks in a dangerous manner, shooting at a house, shooting from a car, we'll respond to those. But for the holidays, we generally do not.
So I guess I just feel like the police kind of have a mechanism to deal with it if it's on a random night already. You know, someone can call. I guess I just don't see the need to have anything further other than that.
Yes.
But technically, there is no ordinance that actually prohibits it. So if these people were like, show me the ordinance that says that I can't shoot off a firework at 10 o'clock at night, we have nothing in place.
Well, ma'am, we wouldn't be addressing shooting the fireworks, we're addressing the
noise. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is what we're addressing. So not when we go to a noise call, we're not specifically looking what calls, whether it's a car horn or engine or fireworks. We're addressing the noise and time parameters that are allowed or outlined in our ordinance.
But if they refused, we couldn't have a penalty for them because currently our ordinance is criminal and the state says you can't have a criminal penalty. So they don't have to comply, I guess what I'm saying under the current system. Mr. Pagliarini, is that the case?
I think technically, ma'am, that is legally correct in that I don't believe legally you can separate the noise. No. Meaning fireworks are allowed. I'm not sure we could legislate the noise related there too as a different penalty, right? The shooting of fireworks versus the noise.
I just want to add, yeah, as one who in my teenage years probably spent way too much money on fireworks.
Mm-hmm.
There's one thing about noise. There's other Roman candles don't make much noise. Bottle rockets don't make a whole lot of noise. So you could be shooting fireworks all year and not have a problem, but it's the M80s and the cherry bombs, right? And the slingshot, which it'll was a lot noise of fun. that's what you're talking about, right? The noise.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Got it. So there again, there's fireworks and there's noise making fireworks. I mean, this gets really complicated.
But I think under state law, our noise ordinance has criminal penalties for violations. And under state law, you cannot have a criminal penalty for fireworks related events, whether it's noise making or non-noise making. Mr. Pagliarini, is that?
Yes, ma'am. That's correct.
So I think that there could potentially be an amendment, an addition to the noise ordinance that is not restrictive, that is a civil penalty, so that, you know, if someone is setting off these fireworks and they do sort of say, well, you know what, I guess the thing is like practically speaking, nobody knows the intricacies of the law.
Mm-hmm.
And so if Mr. Chief was to send a police officer to your house and says, cut it out, everyone's just going to cut it out.
Yeah. Correct.
So I guess I see Mr. Rambert's point. Do we really need to do anything? Or do we want to, but then the lawyer in me is like, well, technically, legally, we should have, is there a backup that we could have in place if, in case someone does know the ins and outs of the law. I mean, now I know the ins and outs of the law, so I can shoot off my fireworks at midnight every single night for the next, you know, month, and there's nothing that can, I'm not violating anything. Not that I'm going to do that. I'm just saying someone could do that, and there would be nothing to stop them.
I hear you. What I have trouble with is splitting that anything that violates the noise ordinance is exempt because of its classification. It made the noise, right?
But the state says you can't penalize someone for that.
They didn't address the noise of it. They just addressed the use of fireworks. And I'll just, you know, I know we're playing like home reality legal show here. You could shoot one of those big things up that's supposed to make an American flag, and if it's a dud and doesn't make a noise, then technically you're protected under state law. But if it makes a boom and you violate our noise ordinance, you have violated our noise ordinance anyway, right?
But you can't face a criminal penalty. Mr. Pagliarini, can you really separate the noise from the firework, the source of the noise?
Yes, ma'am. I think that's the issue is, right, can you separate the noise from the act itself? And there's nothing in state law that appears that we can legislate the noise related to those fireworks, except, as I said, limited in scope and shall not unreasonably prohibit the discharge of fireworks.
And it has to be a civil penalty, not a criminal.
Yes, ma'am. Civil
and our current
penalty, that's
ordinance
correct.
Is criminal.
Right. So they would have to be separate and distinct, whether it's part of the same ordinance subparts. I don't think the form is appropriate, is necessarily important, but how it's legislated. And again, you see things like the city of North Charleston, who has essentially put a very, very limited restriction, and then the city of Charleston, which has attempted a much broader restriction.
What if we, you know, the next holiday coming up, 4th of July, what if we look down the road at what Mr. Pagliarini was talking about, just saying, you know, that already existing without us splitting legal hairs is your ability to apply for and go through the process of having firework prohibited zones. Just get that out, right? There's no action of council, no anything to establish that it already exists.
Sir, I mean, we can move forward with that,
right?
Without,
I mean, we could propose restrictions on fireworks and it not pass council, but this still stands. In other words, they have this avenue now without us having to pass any new action.
So this would leave it to the neighborhoods to make a decision as to what they want in their neighborhood.
It's I don't think it's either or. It can be, you know, both, but one that already exists is, hey, if you were concerned about the fireworks on New Year's, you might want to know that. I don't know what the legal reference is there, Mr. Pagliarini, but it's you have the right to establish a fireworks prohibited zone established in 1985, it looks like.
Yeah, I think the issue with that is that there's not going to be consensus among a neighborhood, right? You know, we often talk about you can't force. So that I just think that there would be, it'd probably be a pretty even split between people in the neighborhoods of those who want to be able to discharge the fireworks whenever they feel like it and those who want a fireworks-free zone. And then the point that you raise, which is, so let's say one neighborhood says, we don't want it, they vote against it, and then literally the neighborhood next door says, we love it, we're not going to do it, and then you're not solving the problem.
Yep, I hear you. Other members? Ms. Hyatt?
I'm just wondering, should a noise ordinance penalty actually be like a criminal? That seems more civil to me. I mean, what if the noise ordinance, the penalty changed from criminal to civil, then we could include the fireworks after a certain hour? I mean, that's what's keeping the fireworks from being included.
No, ma'am, I'm not sure about that. I mean, our noise ordinance can stand on its own and remain criminal, and then there could be either a subpart or a separate provision that could have a civil penalty for fireworks if that's what council wished to do. So I'm not sure we need to
change
the noise ordinance itself as well as the penalty to that.
Because right now, what's the penalty? I mean, it's a criminal.
Yes, I think it falls under our general criminal 30 days or $500, I believe, is our noise.
So you can go to 30 days to jail for being too noisy. Okay. Wow. Okay.
Mr. Rima?
I was going to ask, I remember in the mask discussions, civil penalties are not enforced by police officers. Is that correct?
That's correct, sir. And
isn't that part of the problem? I mean, the R1 code enforcement officer isn't working at 11:30 on a Tuesday night to drive out and write a ticket. I don't know how the intricacies of that work, but I mean, I guess I am for police officers just having the discretion to professionally do their job, and they can make that determination on the scene of if they get called. And I just don't think we need to overburden and have all this technical language. I think we just need to let the professionals handle it.
We also have the issue of all the donut holes in the town, and we could have firework-free zones and things like that, and people in the county could just be lighting up the night sky, and our residents would hear that. That's another issue, I know. But I think the bottom line on all this is the state will not allow us to prohibit them outright. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So we either need to get a motion or some direction, or we need to move on. So where are we?
No.
No motion?
No motion.
Okay. All right, thank you for that review. And I think everybody got emailed this, but this is a real good primer, and it does give how our citizens could establish a firework.
Yes, sir.
What is it? FPZ, firework prohibited zone. All right, 6B, discussion and possible action with regard to town ordinance titled Chapter 41, Civil Emergencies. I guess is sort of the user of this by act of council. There's a couple of things that I want to say. In the context of this discussion, some things that are said in public, some things that are said by members of council. As explained to me by our legal counsel, if you look at the very end, if you look at 41.07, end of emergency period, the mayor shall proclaim the end of such state of emergency or all or any part of the restrictions imposed as soon as circumstances warrant or when directed to do so by the council. So I asked Mr. Pagliarini, I guess we've had this conversation several times. Correct me if I'm wrong. Your advice was council can act, and that means a vote of council. That doesn't mean a couple of phone calls. That means an act of council.
That's correct. Okay. Majority. Okay. Yes, sir.
And given that three council members under our ordinance can call a special or an emergency, correct me if I'm wrong on that, either type, emergency or special, you know, there's a difference. If there is a state of emergency used by me or any mayor, three council members can call a meeting, a simple majority can undo the whole thing or change it. So my understanding of this in this 2020 year of pandemic and civil emergencies and state emergency was council already has absolute veto power. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, that's correct, Mayor.
Okay. So council can call a meeting, undo it, and think back to April, the meeting at which I was out helping my aging parents with a health issue, and the Mayor Pro Tem ran the meeting. The discussion came up about that state of civil emergency, and I believe the expiration date was May the 7th. And the question was put forth to council by me on the agenda, do y'all want to end it now? What do y'all want to do? And council decided you just let it expire as the date was done. So I get the constitutional questions, and I would love for us to get an opinion on those, like firearms and those type things. I certainly want answers to that, and I certainly hope in my lifetime those never come into play. But I just don't want there to be any perception out there that either A, since I'm the one that has used this, that I have not called y'all and known that there was a majority of council, because the last thing you're going to do as mayor is use something like emergency powers to have council call an emergency meeting and undo it. And that hasn't happened. So that's not just words. That's happened. We've done that indeed. And second, that's to me, that's the all-powerful language there, that when directed to do so by council. And I appreciate your legal advice on that from the start, that you could have any mayor in the future do what they want, and council could call an emergency meeting without notice, you know, without an agenda, all that, call an emergency meeting under state law and say, oh, no, you don't. So that having been said, I just wanted to clear up, council has ultimate and I would call instantaneous veto power over Chapter 41. So anything else on that is up to committee. Yes, sir.
I would like to actually make a motion.
All right.
To get rid of, I don't know if get rid of is the correct legal term, to
yeah,
strike.
I was gonna say.
to what, you know what I'm trying to say, to get rid of 41.03A and B. A says, prohibit or regulate the possession of one's own premises, off one's own premises, of explosive firearms, ammunition, or dangerous weapons of any kind, and prohibit the purchase, sale, transfer, or other disposition thereof. And then B is prohibit or regulate the buying or selling of beer, wine, or intoxicating beverages of any kind, and their possession or consumptions off one's own premises. So I do not think that either of those things should be something that one person should have the power to do. So my motion is to get
Right.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. So we're focusing in on guns and liquor.
Yeah.
I get it.
You're not taking my beer. I'm not taking my beer.
We had that discussion back in March. Why would that be in there? I get the one about possession of firearms off one's own premises. That doesn't take your private gun ownership away, but your ability out in public. That would be if you had, I guess, rioting and shooting in the streets was what was the intention of that. The one about beer and all, I'm not sure where that stems from. I don't know.
Well, I think...
Yeah, you have the floor.
You know, I think that this restriction is for off your own premises. So you can have any sort of your arsenal that you have in your garage, you can have that on your property. But I think one of the reasons that this is there is to help our police force in the case of an emergency. Because if you've got individual citizens roaming the streets carrying their weapons, you're creating a dangerous situation for our police to enforce if there's like a civil unrest type of situation. I think it potentially creates more of a hazard for a police department and for citizens to have, you know, if we're in a civil emergency, you probably should stay home and guard your property, you know, but going out into the community with weapons, I think creates danger for the citizen and creates danger for our police. So I understand why we don't want to throw out the Second Amendment, but I guess I'm wondering where these provisions came from. Are they in line with other communities that do this? Is this, you know, what is this something that we should say, well, you know what, we don't need this on a town level. This is something that's covered by state law, you know, that the governor could issue these kinds of orders. This is what I just want to understand a little, because otherwise, why not just strike the entire section, you know, entire 41.03, because all of it is, you know, all of it is restricting these, you know, sort of Bill of Rights, first, you know, Bill of Rights sort of things. Mr. Pagliarini, do you have any thoughts on that?
Ma'am, in reviewing this, and as the mayor said, I think back from last March, how many conversations we've had about this. And as everyone has seen over the course of the last year, if you follow news across the country, various provisions and emergency powers have been challenged and discussed. And as I've said in many of our meetings, it goes without question that most of these were written with a short-term emergency, and now here we are almost a year later, and we're still dealing with that. And so these provisions have been challenged, and many of you have heard specifically as it relates to as to churches and closure of those, and you've seen in many states that those have essentially that has been a point of concern, and many courts have stopped short of allowing these types of constitutional matters to be restricted. As to your question as to whether it invalidates, or at least whether we should consider the entire ordinance and prohibitions, you know, ma'am, at the very least, A and B are the benchmark, aside from religious freedom, of constitutional type. Well, I take that back. I don't think the constitutional framers had the selling of beer and wine, but A at least is a pillar of that.
So is C.
And right, C would be as well.
Right to assemble.
My inclination, based on a year's worth of review of this, is that short-term restrictions, reasonably based, would be able to pass constitutional muster. Short-term with basis. If we're getting into a long-term provision, time means everything when it comes to emergency powers and ordinances, those would struggle. And of course, as we know, in order for these matters to get to court, sometimes takes a while. And therefore, really within our council's hands are what is acceptable. So I don't have much to say as far as which of these provisions council believes appropriate or inappropriate. I would simply say that If reviewing this, it could be a wise decision to review all of these powers and authorities. This was written some 40, 50 years ago, and perhaps there is some room to concisely reword this entire section, if that's what council wished to do.
You know, I think that's where I am. I feel like just to strike A and B without considering C, without considering all the remains, I think maybe I'd be more comfortable with asking, legal to take a crack at all of the provisions in this and sort of see if they can be narrowly tailored or should be struck from the line. Because I think right to assemble, right to bear arms, you know, those are things that we don't want to inhibit those rights. So I'm comfortable with just with having legal take a stab at reworking that section and bringing it back to us next month rather than just striking two provisions and moving on. I don't know. Mr. Rambo, what do you think?
I think those are good comments, and I think that my personal opinion is that we can move this forward to council and, you know, there'd be two readings of council, but we can go ahead and move forward on that. I mean, I know A is of great concern to a number of people, we can get that process started. And if there's any other revisions that can be made, it can certainly be made at that time. I also have issues with C as well. Now that we talk about it, that is a very fundamental right. You think of protests or whatever, but that really falls more under G. You know, I would say G is probably the most common use of this document.
Mm-hmm. And F
is to put a curfew in.
And F would have to do with gouging,
yes,
or anything, and that's,
yes,
where the mask
F
fell
and G.
And after hurricanes, we know we have to be able to say you cannot price gouge. And
I don't understand D either. I don't know why you would prohibit or regulate the sale of kerosene. I don't know what naphtha
it
is.
Create bombs, essentially.
Bombs, bomb making.
Sir, I think the provision.
Aren't there federal laws that
there are, but in general, especially if you remember hurricane and things, maybe there were instances where you could conceive of a situation where gasoline and the like had to be regulated.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
For those.
Mr. Rambo, would you amend your motion to include C?
Yes. Yes. So I would like to amend my motion to include.
Thank you.
To strike item C from this as well, item 41.03C.
All right, amended the primary motion. You seconded. Do you second the with C?
No.
You don't.
No.
Okay.
I'll second with C.
Okay.
Do you want to take those matters separately, or how does that work? Because if you're a fan of getting rid of A and B but not C, we could vote on those separately, or does that not matter at the committee level? I don't.
No, sir. I mean, if the committee wants to make a recommendation, it would be helpful, in my opinion, to the rest of council to vet out each one separately if that's a concern.
All right. So, I would like to take.
Would this come to council next Tuesday as a first reading or no?
That is up to this committee. We can be ready,
yes,
with that or not.
That would be my desire. But I would like to remove the amendment. I would like to remove that amendment so that way we can make a new motion after voting on A and B, and we can vote on it separately.
All right, you already amended your motion, so now you need to amend your amended motion and remove C, right?
What?
Stay with me here. You made an amended motion that included
in my opinion,
C, and it was
Mr. Rambo, it would be best if you just withdrew your motions and started over, and
yes,
then we could,
thank you.
We could do that.
These minutes are going to look terrible. I would like to withdraw everything I've ever said. I would like to withdraw my motion and amendments and everything.
And I'll withdraw my second.
And Laura, will you withdraw your second from my initial? I'll make another
one. Yes.
All right. Okay. Now,
second.
I would like to make a motion to, back to where we started, to strike 41.03 items A and B from this ordinance.
Got it. Is there a second?
A second.
We have a second.
Are we open for discussion?
We're in discussion. Would you like to take the floor?
I second it because I see clearly that those two could just be eliminated. anything else that might be altered, we could do in discussion, I guess, through council, but I see those.
At second reading.
Yeah, at second reading, but I see these two as things that really shouldn't be there. I can see a reason why you wouldn't want marching and things in the roadways, in the public roadways, if there was an emergency. You wouldn't want the roads clogged up with people marching or doing parades. So there might be a way to reword that at some point to allow demonstration, but not inhibit the public roadway or something. So, you know, I'd rather that not be completely gone. But the other two, I have no problem with being completely eliminated. So that's why I second that.
To our knowledge, they've never been used. I don't know in the history of this town that, I don't know if this has ever even been used until now. Hugo, maybe?
I did not go back and check any minutes or records from Hugo, but it's likely that there was something in place at that point.
Right.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
So Ms. Hyde obviously makes some great points there, but we already have existing laws and things that would require a permit for a protest or a march or one of these things, correct? So isn't there really already an enforcement mechanism that goes through a process? I mean, people have to get a permit to have a protest.
There is an enforcement mechanism. I mean, just looking at it from the other side, this an emergency order could provide a basis to deny such a permit if that was necessary. Okay. But yes, sir, I think that's right.
And I just want to point out too, you know, before we throw the baby out with the bath water, if we start getting down to like G and stuff, go back and look at those minutes I sent everybody from the spring, from all the minutes on everything when we had that civil unrest. When you get a call from the chairman of county council and the sheriff, and then talk to our police about, we need a curfew, there's a riot downtown. Well, if there's a curfew enforced down there and there's none over here, that puts us and our police in a bad position. So we have to have the ability to do a curfew, and we don't have time to post an agenda, get a quorum of council, have a meeting, get all the people in place. We did not have time that night. And I don't know about y'all, but that was a scary situation. So let's don't throw the baby out with the bathwater here. Let's get it to something that we all are comfortable with. All right, so we have a motion. We have a second. Any further discussion? All right, so this would come to council next Tuesday in the form of first reading, which could not be amended at first reading. So we may get another shot at it before second reading. We'll just bring it back.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
A and B, the draft ordinance would remove A and B from section 41.03 if this motion is approved and brought to council.
And I get the constitutionality of firearms, but no mayor who has any future in public life is going to prohibit beer and wine. I mean, that ain't going to happen no matter what. All right, all in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, motion passes. Thank you very much.
I would also like to, and I know this probably will not, I don't know if this will pass unanimously, but I think to strike or amend, you know, I don't know how the best way to say it, because I think, you know, the right to assemble is a fundamental right, just as is the right to bear arms. So maybe this is something that legal could explore, maybe without a motion, just to see how we can tailor that.
Yes,
and then that's something that could be explored at a council meeting that could be incorporated in a second reading.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. That one is, you are correct. And that is much more difficult to assess than the others as far as the constitutional ramifications. And we will take a look at that very closely.
Okay. Thank you.
Good thinking.
Yeah.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, sir.
All right. So that was my first thing on this. In talking with some other council members who aren't on this committee, I think part of the concern with the mask ordinances and that sort, or the mask proclamations and that sort of thing, was kind of the public input, you know, that doing a proclamation does not give the public the opportunity to come in and speak and that sort of thing. And I will say I encouraged you to do it.
Thank you.
I encourage you to do it even before you did it.
Right.
And then both times.
Right.
To avoid kind of a a spectacle, not really a spectacle, but an unnecessary large gathering of folks when we already knew what the outcome of a council vote would be. In talking with some of the other council members, I don't know, maybe my logic was somewhat flawed in that we are here to listen to the public and to get their input, and it's just part of our job. And so in thinking of the future of this Chapter 41, and in hearing legal talk about it as well, it seems like maybe there should be something in this ordinance that deals with like a time frame. Like, is it, you know, should it truly should be an emergency where you can't get a quorum of council together is probably the best way to handle these. And like I said, I encourage you to do it. So I'm not, you know, but in the future, you know, if council is meeting and having meetings, then really council should probably vote. I don't know how that would be written into this or if there's any desire to do that. I have no specific language or no specific motion. I just felt like I wanted to say that on behalf, especially of some council members that aren't on this committee.
But I'll just respond, that's not a proclamation. That's an ordinance of council that requires two readings unless it's an emergency meeting.
Correct, yeah.
The other thing I would say, and I've had this conversation with other members of council, my question back was, every council member has the privilege of putting anything on any agenda. Why didn't they do it? If they wanted public input, they could have put it on the agenda, but they didn't. And so that opportunity for public, I mean, the very next meeting after a proclamation is used, any council member can say, I want this for public discussion. I want it on there. And we had massive public discussion. We had 2 hours or more of public discussion. And then in talking to council members, that vote didn't change. That vote was not going to change.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm proclamation is one thing.
Those are good points.
Act of council is yet another thing. So you can't have a proclamation that requires an act of council. Then it's not a proclamation. It's a regular ordinance, right?
Yes, sir. I mean, if you go through the two reading process.
Right.
Yes, sir.
So yes, ma'am.
You know, I think that the situation is just so unprecedented, right? Like we are so used to this emergency coming into play for things like a hurricane or some kind of natural disaster or civil unrest or something that's limited in time and limited in scope. I think that we are in an unusual situation now where this is sort of ongoing. I see the mayor's point that, you know, nothing has changed. Like the council members' votes have not changed on that. We did have public input, public discussion, a lot of it, and that, you know, we've received guidance from our, you know, local healthcare providers and everything on the importance of masking. And I think that I just don't see how there could be a fundamental change when there is this end of emergency period and basically the veto power of council. So if at any time council wanted to veto, wanted to change this, and wanted a second round of public input, you know, council can easily do that, and there's no issue with that. So I just don't know what sort of, again, this is getting, you know, is this something that is necessary? And that I'm not sure that it is.
Okay. Ms. Hyatt?
I agree with that, but I was going to ask, how does it work? You said three? Call a meeting. Is that an opportunity for any public comment? Or there's not enough notice when that happens. So,
well,
like if we wanted to veto something that came up, is that an opportunity for the public to speak when we get together to yes, have a vote to undo it?
Yes, ma'am. Our ordinances provide that at every council meeting,
yeah,
the public
except
has an opportunity
emergency
to comment. But you are correct, sir. In a emergency situation, that may not be the case.
Right.
Council could allow that, but it may not be sufficient notice nor opportunity, especially now that we're in the video world,
right,
where you can envision one of these meetings happening.
Right. But if they strongly felt in a situation they wanted public comment, that could be arranged,
yes,
at that type of meeting, right? So we're not really eliminating,
right,
the public speaking. Okay.
One follow-up question on this is, okay, so we have the rule that it has to go through committee, like anything on the council agenda has to go through committee. But obviously, this has been through committee because we've discussed it several times now, so it would be obvious. But would it need any sort of provision that, like, not even to call a special meeting, but if even just one person wanted to discuss a proclamation and in the future, would they have the ability to just put it on the regular agenda? I think that's the question.
And
they did.
That is an excellent question, and I think the analysis is, if there is no committee meeting with, let's say, an emergency provision is ordered, a proclamation, and it has not gone through committee, our ordinances provide committee requirement first. I would say that there is an exigent circumstances exception to any emergency act.
Yeah.
And so if there was a situation where it was exigent circumstances, then that could be, that requirement could be alleviated. Nevertheless, again, we're now almost a year in. What is an exigent circumstance?
Yeah.
Do we really have those at this point?
Okay.
Last month, it didn't come, it had come to the committee. We had made a decision in our, was it December?
Yeah.
December meeting, and a council member put it on the full council agenda. So, I mean, there's no logjam, obviously.
Yeah. So, this is semi-related, but not really. So, because I've had it come up before where things are time sensitive and they didn't get to committee in time or whatever. But I do feel like at the next PLJ committee meeting, that we should discuss those rules for placing items on an agenda and make it a clear rule that, and use the same any three council members, basically.
Right.
If three council members sign off on placing an item onto an agenda, then it can buy, you don't want it to bypass committee, but if it's a time sensitive thing or whatever, then three council members, just like they can call a special meeting, can put any item on a regular council meeting agenda, because then that'll kind of clear up some of the confusion in my eyes as well, not just with this, but with anything that arises.
You can put that on our next committee agenda.
Yeah, that's why I was just saying before I forget.
You don't need it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to
do.
Okay. So
yeah.
That was what I was saying.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think that's a worthy discussion. They used to have that rule before I got on council, and when I got on, we changed it.
Yeah.
But it's worth taking a look at.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank y'all. All right, so the amendment to remove A and B, to amend this, A and B will be on the Tuesday night as first reading. Got it. Let's get back to our agenda. C, discussion and possible action regarding the impact of Crab Bank restoration project. We've all seen the presentation. We've read the numbers, economic, all of that stuff. It's getting down to decision time for the Corps of Engineers. We are concerned that if our plea for a proper placement has fallen on deaf ears, that we're facing a catastrophic result for our most valuable natural, one of our most valuable natural assets. So we wanted to hear what might be, what might lie ahead, and if we need to go into executive session to get legal advice, we have noticed that on the agenda. Yes, sir.
Thank you. And Mayor, as you're aware, that this entire issue, the Crab Bank, has been around for several years. And Mayor, as you know, over the probably about a year and a half ago, we did engage outside counsel to review this specific question. I will say, just as a matter of for the public, and then of course, more specific questions would be executive session material. The time of decision really needs to be when the decision is made by the Corps of Engineers. And it's a several step process, which would include following through with the administrative requirements. And so if a decision were rendered by the Corps, we'd have to go through the administrative procedures, and then the town would have the option of challenging, if the decision still was not overturned, challenging the matter in federal court against the Corps of Engineers. There is some question that we went through, again, a year and a half ago as to whether that would be local or in Washington. It is a very significant action if something would be brought And of course, the federal laws and federal regulation, as you can imagine, are written squarely in favor of the Corps of Engineers. So it certainly would be a challenging matter. But there are certain elements of consideration. The town has done due diligence, appropriate due diligence in trying to determine possible alternatives, as well as notifying the Corps of those possible alternatives. So that is the general field right now. We have not yet seen that final decision that is underway. I'm happy to answer any questions or discuss any specifics in executive session.
Let me ask a
sure.
Just a time-saving question. We're led to believe that their decision on the placement of Crab Bank yeah. would be coming up, Eric, correct me if I'm wrong, in February. You know, it's always a little here, a little there.
Right.
Would there be anything that we would hear today that would do us any good before the decision? In other words, they might decide to put it exactly where we would like to see it go.
Right.
And then there's no need for any of that. I'm just trying to save us a step.
No, sir.
Ahead of ourselves.
I don't believe so. I mean, again, it would really, I've sort of given you the lay of the land in that once that decision is made, then we'd have to follow through with the, again, with the administrative process and administrative appeals process.
Okay.
Before it went to court. But obviously, if that were to happen, we would be well prepared at that time to do as council wishes. As stated, we have already some time ago discussed with outside council those possibilities.
Is how time sensitive if they announce next week a placement that we can't live with? Is it possible that we would need a special council meeting or something to enable legal action or?
Yes, sir, and that would be recommended. I mean, the complexity of this, and it is a heavy decision, and so that time would be warranted. We certainly could do that. If in the next few days, we'd certainly be able to put it on the February agenda if necessary as well.
Okay. Any questions, or does anybody feel the need for executive session at this point? And one reason we put that on there, we didn't know when we were doing committee agendas if there might be a need, you know, something might have developed in the meantime.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. On the next matter, I have sent a confidential memo to the committee. You are well aware of the situation. I would say, Mayor, I'm certainly wanting to keep you up to date on this matter. If in the interest of time you'd rather not, that memo is sufficient, and I would add some additional information for you all just to keep you aware. The highlight item to bring to your attention is that this matter with Refuel is back on the Board of Zoning Appeals February agenda. This matter has been appealed to the Circuit Court, sent back down. They will be hearing the matter again. There is legal is of the opinion there is no interim action which needs to be taken or could be taken. So I'll leave that to y'all to okay. consider if you'd rather not go through with executive session, or certainly I'm happy to
executive session. We would get more in-depth information, but would you need any action?
Or no,
it
sir.
Would just be informational. Is the committee okay with that? Not going into executive session on that?
Yeah, we have the memo.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr.
Yes,
Pagan. Appreciate it. All right, so that includes item E and F. There's nothing further on our agenda. Is there anything from the committee? There being no further business, this committee stands adjourned.